2 to 3 in the afternoon daily, Monday through Friday. That would be Pacific time. And if you're listening to the live broadcast, it is a program that you may become a participant in by using your telephone. If you have a question about the Bible or Christianity and would like to ask that here, or if you have a difference of opinion from the host and would like to state that here, you're welcome to defend an alternate viewpoint here, because this program does not exist for the purpose of showcasing the personal opinions of the host. It's a genuine attempt to discover what the Bible teaches about things pertinent to our lives as followers of Christ upon the narrow path. It does no good for us to assume we know and bullheadedly continue on in the direction that we've decided upon if there's any chance that we might need to make a course correction. And so we welcome correction here. If you have a difference of opinion, you're welcome to balance comment. The number to call is 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090. And our first caller today is Sandy, calling from San Jose, California. Hi, Sandy. Good to hear from you again.
My call again, and thanks for your show and your ministry. Hey, the verse in Matthew, where Jesus says, "I give you the keys to the kingdom. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound." I probably got it back. "Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in."
I understand. Sure.
So with Jesus saying, "I give you the keys to the kingdom," I mean, that's pretty big. It's like saying, you know, like, here's the key to the house. Here's the key to the car. Here's the key to the vault. Yet I don't fully get it. I've heard people on the charismatic side do the, you know, "We bind in the name of Jesus and we loose him from heaven." But I don't really understand what that verse is all about. And to me, if he says, "I'm giving you the keys," that's got to be important. That's my question.
All right. Well, the question first has to be asked, to whom is this promise made? The Roman Catholics believe that it's primarily made to Peter himself, who is the one being addressed. Others believe that it's a reference to the apostles as a group, because a similar promise is made to them as the apostles, apparently, in chapter 18. Almost the same promise can be found there in verse 18. Matthew 18:18 says, "Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." And that statement, like this one, was made privately to the apostles. And so some people feel like it speaks of a special apostolic privilege, a special apostolic authority. And then, of course, there's the view that it's a reference to, sure, it's spoken to the apostles, but it's spoken to them as representatives of the whole Christian faith, and that anyone who's a part of that Christian faith has this same promise. So the beginning problem is deciding to whom it is spoken. Now, let me just, and then we'll talk about what it means. The Roman Catholics believe that since Jesus in chapter 16 of Matthew and verse 19 is speaking to Peter, that this is a place where Jesus is giving Peter unique authority in the church. And it's based upon this passage probably more than any other, that the Roman Catholics believe that Peter was the first pope, and that all who have ever sat in the seat of Peter ever since, that is the seat of the bishopric of Rome, have been what we call popes and have been the bishop to whom all bishops must submit or must answer. That is the Roman Catholic doctrine, and it's assuming that Peter was given a certain authority above all the other apostles and above the whole church here, and that Peter was given the keys of the kingdom to loose and to bind. And first of all, I want to just say that I don't believe that's a realistic suggestion. For one thing, because the same promise is made to all the apostles, which would include Peter and the others, in chapter 18, verse 18, I think it's more likely that this statement, though it is spoken to Peter, is spoken to him simply as an apostle, that all the apostles, including Peter, have this promise made to them. And it's not making Peter the prince of the apostles or anything like that, as the Roman Catholics would say. I think it's simply a promise that is made twice to the apostles, and the first time it's made in the presence of the other apostles in answer to a question Peter had, or a statement Peter had made, and therefore addressed to Peter, but not to rule out the other apostles. So I'm going to make this at least relevant to all the apostles. And I wonder if we lost Sandy's connection there. It sounded kind of like it. Anyway, what is spoken of by binding and loosing? The way it reads in Matthew 16:19 and almost identically in Matthew 18:18 is, whatsoever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, says the translation I'm looking at. But actually, the literal Greek says, whatever you bind on earth shall have been bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall have been loosed in heaven. Now, that's quite different than the way a lot of the English translations read it, because the way it reads in English, in a lot of our translations, it sounds like he's saying, you bind something on earth, and then it will be bound in heaven. You loose something in earth, and then it will be loosed in heaven. As if he's saying that you have the authority to change whatever you want, whatever this binding and loosing refers to, and heaven will simply respond to your decision, will honor your authority, and will do the thing that you do. Now, of course, Jesus could give such authority to the apostles, but I don't believe that the wording in the Greek supports that, because what it really says is whatever you bind on earth will already have been bound in heaven. And whatever you loose on earth will already have been loosed in heaven, which means that what you are doing on earth is simply binding and loosing things that have already been bound and loosened in heaven. That is to say, what you're doing on earth is simply enforcing or bringing to pass on earth the things that are already realities in heaven. Now, this reminds me of Jesus teaching the disciples to pray, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That is to say, there are things that are true in heaven which need to become true on earth. God's will is done in heaven, so also may it be done on earth. That's what we're supposed to pray. Now, Jesus is telling the disciples, there are certain things bound in heaven. You bind them on earth. There are certain things loosed in heaven. You loose them on earth. So that the idea is that the apostles are being told that what is true in terms of heavenly decisions that have been made about binding and loosing are to be enforced on earth through these people. We could say through the apostles, or we might even say through the whole church. It's hard to say to the extent that this is intended to apply to the whole church. But what we are seeing then is that the disciples, and by the way, since there is such a close connection between this statement and the prayer, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, which I think is a prayer for all Christians, we could suggest that the church as an agency, perhaps especially through its leaders, the apostles, is that agency through which whatever has been established in heaven is to be brought to enforcement here on earth. Now, the question is, what is it that has been bound or loosed in heaven? This is not made clear in the statement, and it may be that Jesus intended that they would already know these terms. The Jews did, in fact, use such terms in his time. The rabbis would speak of binding things and loosing things, and what they meant by that is allowing something or disallowing it. If one rabbi would allow you to divorce your wife, let us say for, because she's gotten old and ugly and you found someone you like more, well, his allowing you to divorce your wife for that, it would be said that such and such a rabbi, in this case would be Rabbi Hillel, who did actually permit that, say Hillel has loosed this behavior. Loosing it means permitted it. He has loosed you, he's freed you to divorce your wife in such a situation, or to do whatever else has been allowed. In the teaching of the rabbi, if he permits something, he is freeing you or loosing you to do it. He has loosed that behavior. But if, Rabbi Shammai says, no, you cannot divorce your wife for such a cause as that, then he has bound it. He has restricted it. And so the rabbis did use this language, binding and loosing, to speak of what they would disallow or what they would allow in their teaching. And this being, as I understand it, a common expression in the time of the apostles and one familiar to them, they would probably understand Jesus to be saying that what God in heaven allows and disallows, you will be allowing or disallowing on earth. That is, you, the apostles, will be my spokespersons. And what I have decreed, what I have decided, is what you will announce and will decide and enforce in the church on earth. So that what God has bound or loosed in heaven will be bound or loosed on earth, that is, in the life of the Christian community, by the decree of the apostles. And so I'm thinking that's the primary meaning of this statement. It may extend further, and a lot of people do use it to speak of, dealing with demons. I don't know in what sense they would say they would loose demons, but there's a lot of people who talk about binding demons. And I don't know that this passage is intended to be talking about the binding of demons. But if it has any relevance to that at all, by perhaps extrapolation from what Jesus actually was talking about, it may be this, that Jesus said he had bound the strong man. And in Revelation 20, we read of Satan depicted symbolically as a dragon with a chain being bound in a pit. Now, if this is talking about something that has been accomplished in heaven, and the Bible does suggest that such a thing has been accomplished in heaven. For example, in Colossians 2:15, it says that through the cross, Jesus disarmed the principalities and powers. He means the demonic powers. And made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in the cross. It's using the language, in the Greek language, this is using the vocabulary of the Roman conquering generals bringing their prisoners in chains back to Rome to be executed, but before executing them, traipsing them under an arch of triumph through the streets to publicly humiliate them and to demonstrate their utter defeat. Now, that's the wording, the special vocabulary that the Romans used of that particular kind of triumphal procession. That's the language Paul adopts to make his statement about what Christ has done to the principalities and powers, the demonic forces, in Colossians 2:15. And if Jesus has, in fact, disarmed the demonic powers and the kingdom of darkness and has taken its rulers and marched them through the streets in an open triumph, this could be depicting what is accomplished and recognized in heaven. But, of course, on earth, that has not been recognized. Now, if that is so, if Jesus has bound in heaven the principalities and the powers, has bound in heaven Satan, so to speak, but they still do their activities on earth, then it may be a legitimate extrapolation from these statements that whatever is bound in heaven, you will bind on earth. It is true, of course, that by preaching the gospel and by intercession and by making disciples and by exerting the influence of the kingdom of God upon the cultures of the earth, that we do draw back the powers and limit the powers, and perhaps could be said to be binding the powers of the demonic influence that's already dominating people, so that our activities as a church bind on earth the activities of those demonic powers, which, as far as heaven is concerned, have already been incarcerated. That is a possible secondary meaning. I think the primary meaning of the statement, though, has to do with the apostles being the ones who declare on earth the decisions that have been made in heaven, binding and loosing, permitting and not permitting. If there is a secondary application to the demonic realm, it may be, as I've just said, that in heaven